It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed on the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
And good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are you
it's
today?
It's a lovely day out there. Happy to be here. Happy to see you again.
Absolutely. Yes, folks, we ended up replaying life insurance last week because I've been under the weather, and it is good to be back.
Absolutely.
We're gonna not 100%, but we're back.
He's 92%, maybe, give or take.
Yeah.
So that's all right. So we're picking up as a extended version of the week before, which we talked about mutual fund break points, as they say, a break worth taking.
There you go. Right. What we're doing is revisiting some of these topics because in April of next year, the fiduciary rule, depending on whether it actually continues and stays in place, but the fiduciary rule will be implemented. And we thought it would be good to help you guys, the listeners, understand what's going on. You'll be receiving some new paperwork if you have an IRA account with a broker. If you have an IRA account with a registered investment advisor, not much should change for you. But if you do have a brokerage relationship, that this new fiduciary rule really throws a lot of changes into the mix. So we were discussing that. We wanted to wrap the mutual fund discussion up, and then next week we'll bring in what is the difference between broker-dealer or RIA, registered investment advisor, and how all that will play out should the fiduciary rule, as it is written now, be implemented.
And that's the question. Is it going to remain the same, or is it going to change? And no one knows the answer to that. It depends on who is appointed in the Department of Labor position and how it is directed towards leaving it in place or modifying it. But we're going to have to act as though it's going to be in place because there is very little time to prepare for the requirements of the new regulation by next April 10th when it takes effect. So at this point, we were talking about mutual funds. Let's revisit that a little bit. Generally, on the retail side of mutual funds, when you invest, there are different share classes. Class A shares, you pay an upfront sales charge, generally starting at 5.75%, which goes down based on what we call break points. That's the break worth taking. If you have break points and you're within the same fund family, the more money you invest, the lower the sales charge, all the way up to a net asset value, or NAV as it's called, at $1 million, where you do not pay any upfront sales charge, but they do pay a quarter of a basis point service fee, or trail, sometimes it's called, a 12B1, from those funds. If you are not in A shares, then you used to have some choices called B shares. Those have been eliminated from several major fund families, but the way they worked is you invested, did not pay an upfront sales charge, but you paid a higher asset charge that continued for the first 7 years. And at that time, they converted from B to A shares.
To be or not to be?
It is to be, because it was, I think. And in that case, you may have seen on your statement transactions, which said you had X number of shares, B shares, and they were converted to X number to Y number of shares of A shares after that 7th year. So don't get confused. What you're doing is what you're doing is you were paying a higher asset charge, which then is reduced when you go to A shares. The other common thing we see is or C shares, and it's not C for cat, but C shares where you do not pay an upfront sales charge. But you do pay a 1% surrender, typically, if the account is redeemed within the first 12 months. And you also continue to pay a 1% service fee forever. So logic prevails in that if you have an account, an investment that's going to be there for, I generally say, 7 to 10 years or more, you are far better off in A shares because you pay the upfront sales charge once and only once, and then you have a much lower asset charge which continues out. And we have indeed run the numbers a number of times comparing A and C shares using, actually, FINRA has a Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. If you go out to their website, FINRA has a calculator just for that point. If you invested $10,000 in A shares and held on to it for 20 years in a particular fund, what would be the cost? And if you invested the same money in C shares, what would be the cost? And interestingly enough, the A shares are paying significant lower sales charges than you do in the C shares.
Well, if you think about it, if you pay the commission up front or the front load and your initial investment is $50,000, 20 years from now, that $50,000 hopefully will be worth, you know, $100,000, $150,000, depending on the growth rate and any other contributions. So your fee is on the lower amount, the initial investment, as opposed to throughout where you're picking up fees on the higher dollar amounts.
Yeah, it's interesting, but, you know, paying a lower fee on a greater dollar amount makes sense.
A lower fee on a lower dollar amount.
A lower ongoing fee on a bigger dollar amount as the account grows.
Okay. I'm with you now.
I will clarify. Sorry.
All right. I haven't had enough coffee.
So, well, that's true, but this too will come. Have a couple of examples we began to talk about last time, and John's going to get some more coffee while I do. So it's my show now.
Don't miss me.
I'm locking the door.
You better participate.
Yeah, no doubt. But anyway, C shares. I had a client come not too long ago, and they interviewed me, as you should any financial advisor, and seemed to be happy with the way I approach things and the way that we would service their account. And they wanted to roll over a 403B account that had significant dollars, well over $100,000. In C shares, which I found interesting because as a retirement account, I would never have put it in C shares. But there are brokers who do that to accumulate and gather the 1% fee forever. But they had it in C shares, so it really was not in their best interest. I'm going to talk about the best interest for me to move that to A shares, even though they, you know, had they done that initially, they would have been better off. But they were already paying in C shares or within 5 years of retirement, so there's no advantage to paying a higher front-end charge. But they had another $30,000 or $40,000 they wanted to invest. And I not every fund company will do this, but I contacted the fund company, and because they already had $100,000, even though they were in C shares, they allowed me to count that towards the letter of accumulation so that on the new money they put in, I got the break point at above $100,000, and they only paid, I think, 3.25% upfront sales charge on the new A-share money as opposed to 5.75% they would have paid had I not done my homework and contacted the fund company to determine that they would allow me to include the C-shares. And again, not every fund company will do that, but it should be up to your broker, your investment advisor to know those things and to be able to ask the question. I had another situation yesterday, actually, where a client was receiving a refund of excess contribution from the teacher's retirement system. That's in the state of Illinois, the TRS, for those teaching in public education at the lower level, at the elementary and high school level. And they were receiving a refund of, wasn't a lot of money, but they were receiving a refund from TRS. They got a form from the state saying, do you want to roll this over into an existing account? The Portability Act, which passed about 10 years ago now, allows money to be moved from IRAs and 403Bs and 457s into similar accounts in addition to 401K so that you have portability within different types of accounts. However, being the wise advisor I am, watch it, John, I contacted
the... nothing about wisdom and age being correlated.
Yeah. I contacted the... I'm really wise. I contacted the fund company and because they had a 403B account. And normally, it would indicate that you could roll this TRS redemption, which is 403B money, into that existing 403B account. However, because the 403B was still governed by the school district that it was created under, the school district had elected when they set up their 403B not to allow rollover money to go into it, which is a little unusual. I would not have done that had I set it up originally, but they did. So all of a sudden, the money we were hoping to roll into the 403B that was existing could not be rolled in there because of the governing documents that were put in place with the original 403B. Solution: set up a separate IRA, which we're in the process of doing, roll the TRS money into the IRA, taking advantage of breakpoints based on all of the accounts, and then if they wanted to move the 403B money, which they're no longer contributing to, into the IRA, they could without paying additional sales charges. The only advantage there is they don't pay the $10 annual fee for having two accounts, two retirement accounts at the fund company versus one. So that's their choice. I mean, there's no change in benefit to them other than the $10, and there's certainly no change to benefit to the advisor for having it in one account versus two. So there are a lot of ins and outs of using different share classes, and I just have to kind of cringe when I look at accounts and determine that, you know, there are C classes and there are inappropriate share classes, and I'll jump over to simple IRAs, I'll jump over to 401Ks, solo Ks, SEPs, any type of other retirement program, which is governed by ERISA, that they are using A shares still and paying front-end sales charges, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever as far as being in the best interest of the client. And that leads us back to the fiduciary rule.
But the broker makes money.
The broker does make money. And unfortunately, it is in his best interest, his or her best interest, not in the client's best interest. And that's kind of what the fiduciary rule is about.
I agree. I mean, the fiduciary rule is certainly about that. Unfortunately, as you and I understand, the pendulum has swung too far in this direction with government oversight. So, you know, we started out with the pendulum, where, as Larry used to call it, the Wild Wild West back before there was ERISA, and anything kind of went, to now we are in a situation, like a lot of other industries, that is just completely overregulated and really has made a mess of for us to do our job to help you guys. So in this situation, it would be common sense that if you're a fiduciary and you're an advisor, you do everything that's in the best interest. You've heard us say that several times. Unfortunately, it hasn't been that way, and that's all about to change, and it'll get interesting quickly.
It will get interesting, and I believe that it's good for the industry. There will still be those who are treating clients in the interest of the advisor and not in the best interest of the client, but that's something that we have never done and would not consider doing, which is why we've been in business as long as we have, and we have been successful at retaining clients over the long haul.
And I think in general, you know, certainly a majority of advisors out there are in the business because they do want to help people and they do what is in the client's best interest. Unfortunately, as you know, in a lot of cases, it's the bad apples that get all the attention and tarnish the industry.
No question about it. So I think we've beat that one to death as far as breakpoints. You know what you're paying. I know there's an ad on TV about the son having lunch with his father, and the son is out in the working world now after he graduates, and the father's saying, "Boy, I hope you have looked at investing. You're putting some money away for the future." And the son asks, "Well, how much do you pay for your broker for investing, Dad?" And the dad looks at him and goes, "I don't know." And that's the wrong answer. You need to know what you're paying, and it's the responsibility of your advisor to let you know what you're paying and to look at the different options, if there are options in the investment choices that you have available, so you can make those decisions.
And take care of the things you can control, and fees certainly is one of them. Ask the right questions. There's plenty of information out there with this new fiduciary rule. There'll be a lot more information where you can assess and determine what you're paying in fees, and then what else is available that can generate the same type of returns for you and cost you less money.
Ask questions, because if you are not informed about what the choices are and the different types of investments, and do some research. You can go to Consumer Reports, you can go to Money, and take it with a grain of salt to a certain extent, because most of the writers are not financial advisors. And they're going to be reporting information as they have it available through research. but it doesn't beat, 20 plus years of experience in the industry and seeing how it's developed over the years. With the new fiduciary rule, we have been very, very diligently following up on that and looking at what the requirements are going to be. And for us, by and large, it's going to be a lot more paperwork. It's going to be a lot more disclosures, some additional discussion. For our clients, it is going to be the same. It's going to be a lot more paperwork, some additional discussion. It's going to be mandatory. I use that term loosely, but mandatory now that the client spends the time necessary for us to get to know them, their financial situation, including not only, I have $50,000 in my 401k I want to roll over. Well, that's good, but what else do you have in terms of both qualified and non-qualified accounts? What are your goals, your objectives, your needs, your wants? What are the types of things down the road that you're planning to achieve? What are your specific guidelines as far as when do you want to retire? How much money is it going to take to retire? What's it going to take to get there? Which for our clients is going to take more time. And unfortunately, the clients who are not willing to put that time in under the fiduciary rule are not going to be able to work with an advisor of the type that we serve, because we're going to be prohibited from doing that without having sufficient information to make recommendations that are in the best interest of the client.
Absolutely.
He agrees. I'm glad he agrees with me once in a while anyway.
Still not 100%. Still kind of. So let's talk about Chef Shop.
The Chef Shop, one of our favorite places to visit here in town, as you well know, located in the Schnucks Plaza, right next to Target at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. Both Scott and Nancy are in there. Their phone number is 618-659-9840. Check out their website. They have at chefs.shop, at chefs.shoppe, at prodigy.net. They have lots of specials on, particularly for the current holiday season and coming up. Every week they're going to have different things available. We're going to be working with them to try and arrange a date that we can be there and visit with hopefully some of our fans who have been listening to the show over the last, John, it's almost been 6 months since we've been running the show.
That's not possible.
It is amazing.
But they let us keep coming back.
We do keep coming back. I don't know what your coffee was today, John, but I had mixed up a batch, one of my favorites, the Caramel Kiss. It's the Coffee Master's Finest Arabica Coffee. It's flavored with creamy, toasty, buttery, rich flavor of caramel to create a taste sensation in a cup. Kind of like having dessert.
Absolutely. I do like that one, even though, it's completely up your frou-frou alley.
It is. Believe me.
For me, I went back with the traditional Colombian. Boring me. It's something hearty. Absolutely. It's not Highlander Grog material, but it's a good cup of coffee, a good cup of Joe.
Get in there, take a look at the coffees. They have some new ones. Look at all of the candy that they have, the fudge on the wall, as well as the popcorn, some of my favorites. We'll be talking about those a little more. But we appreciate their sponsorship of the program and WSIE allowing us to visit with you every Saturday at 9 a.m. to 9:30 in terms of providing good financial education with a smooth cup of coffee.
My kids certainly like that wall of candy.
A wall of candy. Sounds dangerous to me, John.
With Christmas around the corner, every time we go in there at Liam, it's like Christmas every day. Wall of candy, he's set.
I was out at an event here on campus at WSIE or in the student union yesterday and meeting with graduates, soon-to-be graduates, students who are graduating in May of 2017 or possibly even in January 2017. And the subject that was put on by student services was to answer any questions the students had. My particular category was student loans, budgeting, and saving for retirement. And I had about 20 students who came up over the period of an hour or two who spent some time with me, had some really good questions, particularly about student loans in terms of should they pay them off quickly, slowly, what are the different programs available, are there different options for forgiveness of student loans, what's the option. And my number one consideration, and I provided to all of the people I talked to, was a budget sheet. You have to start with a budget. You have to know what your expenses are. You have to know what your specific needs are in terms of paying your expenses. You have to know what your wants are. Certainly loan repayment follows in there, but determining how quickly and what payments you make is a what if on all of the other criteria that you set forth. So I'm not a big proponent of paying them off immediately when it sacrifices putting money away for your 401k or 403b. But you have to know what the terms and conditions are. So I, you know, advise them to contact the loan company who provided the money and see what those requirements were for repayment, any prepayment penalties, how long they could take, and the interest rates, and then get back to me, and I would be happy to help them in terms of making the plan, as we say, you know, a specific plan with written objectives, time frame, implementation, and follow-up to get to the point.
But I have found this generation, the millennials, to be very astute, very good savers. When I go around and do my one-on-one meetings and have sit-downs with a lot of these younger people, they're saving at incredible rates. So they get it, and it's really good to see. With regards to student loans, I mean, it's a quick analysis. It's basically a cost of carry. If you're paying 2.5% on the debt, keep that debt because you can earn a lot more conservatively investing, and it's worth carrying that debt because you're making more money with the money that you have invested as opposed to paying down the debt.
Well, and interestingly enough, they are concerned. I did hear some level of concern from many of them regarding
the
ability. Yeah, I can't imagine why, John. Well, regarding their ability to put enough money away to be able to retire, and looking at these, I use the term lightly, kids, you know, in their 20s, early 20s, most of them, some mid-20s, and they're walking out of school with the average was about $38,000 in debt. That they are faced with. I had a number of students from the pharmacy college who are graduating with well over $100,000 in debt. Their starting salary is going to be in a range of $110,000 to $120,000. So it's very manageable, relatively speaking, but you got to have a plan, you got to have a budget, and you have to take a look at it. But it's so important to start early. You know, one example that I have, particularly an individual who starts at age 22, versus waiting until age 42, you can save so much less starting early. You know, the person at age, starting at age 32, saving $1,150 a month gets you pretty close to $2.2 million after 33 years, or at age 65 before taxes. And a person waiting 10 years, starting at age 42, has to put away almost $2,800 a month to reach the same goal in 10 less years. And, of course, that's because of the rule of 72, is the last doubling of the money based on, if you know, use whatever you want, an 8% rate of return on average. So you could start at age 32 putting $1,150 a month away, or you can wait 10 years and start at 42 and put $2,800 away, and you get to the same place at age 65. So the earlier you start, if you back that up to 22, you're in even better shape in terms of you don't have to put a lot away in order to make a significant impact down the road.
And one of the key takeaways from that study is not necessarily, well, I'm not 22, so why bother? Take it of the approach that you can start now, or you can wait and keep waiting, and you fall further and further behind. And you know, we commonly call this the eighth wonder of the world, which is compound interest, your interest earning interest and so forth. Works wonders if you give it the time that it needs.
So tell me more about the eighth wonder of the world, John.
The eighth wonder of the world. Well, I have four wonders of the world. I have four great kids. And with Thanksgiving around the corner, I asked them this morning as I was driving them to school. I said, hey, guys, I will mention you on the radio show. Tell me what you're thankful for. And my oldest, Declan, he's 12 years old. Not surprisingly, said technology. He's thankful for technology.
Can't imagine why.
Can't imagine why. He likes his iPad, and he's actually very good to have around the house because he helps my wife and I out with some of the technology issues that we come up with every now and then. My second child, Marlena, she replied, friends and family.
That's a winner.
That's a winner. Liam, who is our high energy one, he actually replied school. So I'm not sure if he thinks that some of the teachers are listeners. If they are, great, because he replied school. But I did inform him that brown nosing may not work here because I'm not sure that some of the teachers are listening. And then my youngest, Adeline, who is six, she replied house. She likes the house because it keeps her warm when it's cold and keeps her cold when it's warm.
And there are those that don't have the benefits of good housing and food on the table at this time of year. So we encourage everybody to be as generous as you can be in helping out for the food pantries and for putting money into the charities to help those who are less benefited than we are.
I think it's very easy to lose sight of just how blessed we are. Even some of our poorest people have it better than the poorest people in other countries. And I'm very thankful for what we have, and I'm glad that my children are. As far as, a Thanksgiving approaching, Larry, I'm thankful for Larry.
Well, John, the feeling is mutual,
Virtual hug, and let's move on before we get too uncomfortable here.
Yeah. So I have to say, I'm thankful for family first and the opportunity to have a great life in America and the chance to grow and to take it on new opportunities and to help others, mostly through the work that we do in terms of financial planning and meeting various goals and objectives and satisfying the requirements that people have.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, it's some days, it's tough, but that's with any job. But for the most part, I really do enjoy what we do and enjoy being able to help people. But
let's talk a little bit about what's coming up, John.
Next week, we will be, again, continuing our previous discussions, but more with the fiduciary rule slant. We wanted to revisit the difference between a broker-dealer, registered investment advisor, what this can mean for you, the investor, some changes that will be coming up. We talked about a lot of these on the mutual fund side, but going to deal specifically with that. And hopefully the following week, we will have a guest in here. We're hoping to bring a guest in. We're considering...
It's a secret. Don't tell anybody.
I won't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
But if you do stop at the Chef Shop, be sure to mention the show. If you're a listener, they have a box full of some goodies.
Giveaways.
So please mention that you heard about them on this show, and you get a free goodie.
Tell them the Financial Cafe is the best show you've heard on WSIE all year.
And if that's an exaggeration, that's fine.
Yeah, we'll take it. But get your free goodie. We've got them in there. We will, like I say, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, also be there to visit with you on a Saturday as we get that scheduled. But we want to say definitely thanks to the Chef Shop for sponsoring us, giving us the opportunity to bring you some hopefully helpful financial education, as well as Station WSIE. Steve Jankowski and the folks here are great. Daryl, in terms of giving us the opportunity to put this show together and put it on the air. Our website, financialcafe.us, will be up and running within, hopefully, the next 2 weeks. So check it out, financialcafe.us. If it's not live yet, it will be shortly, and we will have all of our podcasts out there. So if you missed the show on life insurance or annuities or how to select a financial advisor or anything dealing with the markets and your financial future, feel free to check it out because you may find a show specifically geared to that. If the show doesn't answer your question, then be sure and email us. Contact John at jgraney, it's J-G-R-A-N-E-Y, at nickelfinancial.com, or Larry at L-Lexo, so it's L-L-E-X-O-W, at nickelfinancial.com. We will be happy to answer any questions that you have regarding any financial topic, either on the air or individually one-on-one. So have a great week. We'll be back with you soon, and enjoy the holidays.
You've been listening to the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.